I first I'm going to say the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially let go of all my old ideas so I can learn your truth. God, help me carry your message tonight. Amen.
Amen.
Okay. I just want to give a shout out to my friend Bruce on the podcast. He had 28 years for Minnesota, and he's my buddy and my spiritual advisor. Tonight, we have a couple new people. We go through the book. We've been doing it for 12 years. The website has all the steps and everything. We're three different parts of the book. On Sunday, we've taken quite a while to get to page 64. And if you're new in recovery, these pages will change your life. Because we're at the part of the book where we're finally, we've decided we've admitted to ourselves that we're alcoholic. And we admit we're an alcoholic, powerless over alcohol, and we admit that we're alcoholic. They're two different things. When people come in here and they say they're alcoholic, they have to understand what that means. I've seen a lot of new people, they've even been in treatment, they don't completely understand that. We have an allergy of the body, so if we take alcohol, we can't control how much we drink. Anybody have that? Mm-hmm. Then we like the way it makes us feel, and so we get this obsession to drink when we don't feel good, or even if we feel good, we want to feel better. And sober, our mind tells us to get a drink even when we don't want to. Now, how can that be possible? We're insane. Well, that's true. That's what we are. Because we can't see the truth about alcohol right before we take that drink. We can only think what it's going to do for me, not to me. Anybody have that happen? And you can't explain it to anybody that's not an alcoholic. Then the third thing that makes me an alcoholic, which they don't tell you until page 60, is that we live a life separated from God. We run the world. We're selfish and self-centered. And we don't like the way the world's going. We don't like the script. And we get fearful and angry, and we get shame and guilt. We harm people, and we don't like the way that feels. So our mind says, get a drink. So if we're going to treat our disease of alcoholism, we have to learn a different way to live sober. So we don't, and we have a different solution when we don't feel good. And it's God and not alcohol. And we learn how to change the way we see things so we don't have to feel bad at all. We don't have to be irritable, restless, discontent, unless we choose to. Isn't that good? Anybody want to know how to do that?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to start the process tonight when we look at step four. So we admit we're powerless over alcohol. Anybody admit that here?
Yeah.
If you're sober 30 years, are you still powerless over alcohol? Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm powerless the rest of my life on my own against alcohol. The only power I have today not to drink is my relationship with God. And the more days you do it and the more you try to seek God, the more further you get away from actually taking the drink. But if you stop doing the deal and you stop inventorying and praying and going to meetings and talking to people and working with others, your mind can get pretty crappy quickly, and you never know when you'll say, drink's a good idea. We're never immune to that thought on our own. So we don't want to get too far away from God, right? So step two, we believe that there is a power that can restore me to sanity, can give me the truth about alcohol. Anybody want that? And why do we believe that? Well, because we see people in here who have had those problems, and it's been, they found the power in their life, and they're not obsessed to drink today, and they've stayed sober long periods of time. But the reason we really know it's true is this book was written, and it's a testimony that if you do these steps, then you'll have a power, and that power will relieve you of the insanity. Anybody agree with that? Yes. We have people in here, and the thing for me is, I don't have a video of when I came in here. It was probably pretty bad. But I've seen a lot of people in this room when they came in, and I remember the look on their faces, and now you see them today, and you know there's a miracle, that God's done something for them they cannot do for themselves. Now, step three is having faced the fact that I can't manage my life. Anybody think you can manage your life? Well, anybody? No? So everybody's fired themselves. Is that true? Have you fired yourself all the time? Well, good. Step four is how we learn to fire ourselves all the time, and we see it so we can see the truth about things. So we can never have a manageable life on our own. We'll never have power over alcohol on my own. I can't restore myself to sanity, so I'm going to make a decision that I'm going to seek the power that will do this. I've decided that I'm not going to play God anymore. Anybody want to do that? Why is that a good idea?
Because we're not God.
We're not God. It was hard for me to understand, and it didn't work. Well, when you've played God your whole life, you don't even see it. It's the water you swim in. The two fish are saying to each other, "What's water?" But you see, we did it automatically. We didn't realize it. We weren't bad people. We just had the wrong manager. So we're going to decide that God is going to be our director, right? And we want him to direct my thinking and my actions. Anybody want that? Good. Now, having done all that I just said, nothing's going to change. You'll leave here, you'll get in your car, you'll get pissed off about something, you'll be afraid of something, blah, blah, blah. You won't like me, I talk too much, blah, blah, blah. Who knows? You're back in yourself. So we're going to look in step four at our life when we came in here and how we had blocked God with our thinking. Now remember, our problem is S-H-I-T, simply how I think. I think wrong. Now, I can think right when I'm with God, but if I'm left to myself centered, I see things wrong. And you're going to need to do this the rest of your life. We don't get perfect here. And we're learning in step four how to recognize it, face and be rid of anger, fear, and shame and guilt, and hopefully we're going to have inventory our relationships so we have sane conduct in our relationships and we're not hurting people anymore. So, in step four is the beginning of change. Steps one, two, and three won't do anything. Step four is where we begin the process of looking and facing and be rid of these things. Be generous. When I said it was a $2 meeting, we got less money. So I don't say anything now. All right, so we're now on step four, and we're on page 64. And it says, and step four is very simple. A lot of people think it's very complicated. In step four, we're going to look at a life run on self-will. We're going to look at our life, how it looks when we come in here. And we don't have to apologize for it or explain it. This is how it looked. And we're going to look at our life and our thinking, and we're going to look in three areas that when you have self-will and you're self-centered, there are three things that we live with. Anger. Anybody get angry a lot? Fear. Anybody afraid? Anybody come in here and be really afraid? Remember how bad it was when you came in? It can be bad today. And then we harm people in our relationships. We don't want to do that anymore. So when this fourth step, we're only going to look at three things. Our anger, our fear, and our relationships, and then from that, we're going to gather the information, what was wrong with my personality and my thinking, and we're going to recognize how to be rid of, change our thinking through prayer, and then we're going to learn about the character that we don't want to have anymore. And I gave the new people the card. We don't want to live on the left-hand side of the card anymore. We want to live on the right-hand side. Now, unfortunately, we're going to wake up and start on the left-hand side. So we're going to have to recognize, in this step, we're going to learn how to recognize it and change and get back on the right-hand side all the time the rest of your life. So if you haven't done a fourth step, you don't have any of this information. You're just left with your thinking. And so it says, being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what defeated us. We all agreed with that, right? We're going to look at its common manifestations. Now, what they mean is, when you're self-centered like we are, our manifestations of our life, if you were to take a painted picture of our life is full of fear, anger, and harmful actions. It's not pretty. The other analogy I use is we have a tree when we come in here, and our tree, the bark's rotting, the wood's falling apart, there are no leaves on the trees, it's all rotten and it smells bad. And that's because the tree is rooted in my self soil. And what we want to do is see the truth of that tree, We're going to look at the branches, the resentment, fear, and the harm. So we're going to go back and see our character defects, and then we're going to see how we have to change the soil from us to God. Does this make sense? And so we could have a pretty tree all the time now if we do this step and we stay close to God. It says resentment is the number one offender. So what is it offending? It takes me out of the moment. It takes me out of the now. It takes me away from God. AA is a very simple program. We only have one problem when we come in here. Anybody know what that is? Conscious separation from God. Well, what the hell does that mean? It means in my mind, I play God. As soon as I do that, I'm not in the moment with God. And if I'm not in the moment with God, He has no power in my life, and I have no power over alcohol. And so the treatment of our disease is to stay in the moment with God all the time. So we have to learn when we're not in the moment what we have to do to get back. So resentment takes me out of the now. Did anybody have a bad day at work, get angry at somebody, go home, sit in their chair, plot their execution, and the other person's at home watching Big Bang? It sounds ridiculous, but if you're an alcoholic, I know you've done it, right? Corey's smiling because we've done it. Corey and I've done it. And we don't want to do that anymore because I have no relationship with God. And we used to drink over that. Anybody drink over things like that? And so it's a number one offender. It blocks me from the power. Resentment, a lot of people say, well, I don't have any resentments. I've heard that. They don't have resentments. Resentment is any anger that lasts more than 10 seconds. I just made that up. But it's true. If you're angry, you're blocked from God. And if you keep it for more than 30 seconds, it becomes a resentment. And then you don't know when it's going to come back and bother you during the day. We don't want to be bothered. We don't want to be blocked. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. How can resentment destroy you? Well, it separates you from God. It makes you restless, irritable, discontented. It makes you want to get a drink. It makes you want to react and do harmful things to people. Anybody act out of anger and do some bad things? When you look back in your life, you say, why did I do that? That was so horrible. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. We have a spiritual disease. That's why it's not going to be treated with a pill. We take too many of them. It wouldn't be enough. My wife told me there was a long advertisement about some drug now that's going to treat drug addiction. I said, don't worry, honey. There's probably a lot of disclaimers. Alcoholics or addicts will figure out a way. If they don't like the way they feel on that, they're going to find something else. Don't worry. But we have a spiritual disease. So it needs a spiritual solution. So what does a spiritual disease look like? I was a cancer doctor, so when people came in with cancer, they lost a lot of weight, they couldn't eat, they had all these symptoms. What's the symptoms of my spiritual disease? My anger, my fear, my harmful conduct. I'm in conflict with everybody and everyone. What's the root of that? Me, I'm at dis-ease with God. So my spiritual disease is I'm not at ease with God. Now, if I'm at ease with God, then I'm going to have peace, serenity. Anybody want that? So we just want to be okay. We just want to have peace and serenity. I'm not asking for a lot when I came in here. I just wanted to have some peace. I just wanted to feel okay. I wanted to feel okay inside. Anybody else want that? And when I have that today, I can't do better than that. And I'll tell my wife I'm okay, and she goes, great, honey, I'm happy for you. But what I mean is I'm okay right now at this moment. I'm okay right now. And okay means you're with God. You're at peace with God. It's a peace beyond all understanding. Isn't that what it says in the scripture? And so we want to have spiritual ease. We want to be at ease with God. But we've lived our whole life at dis-ease with God because we were running the world. It says we have not only been mentally ill, we're mentally ill because we're drinking when it knows it kills us. We're mentally ill because we're judging everybody and we're angry all the time and we believe things and have fear that aren't true. And we're physically ill because we separate ourselves from the physical world because we're angry at all these people and have all these people we've harmed. And we're also physically ill because it affects our bodies. And we have the allergy to alcohol. We can't overcome that. But we can straighten out mentally. So it says, when the spiritual malady is overcome and we're connected to God, then my mind's connected to God. I'm not going to be angry and fearful all the time. I'm not going to have all these character defects all the time. Now, I still get them. But we're all day long, when we work the steps, we're getting back at ease with God. We separate, we get back. And God's like the prodigal son. We go back in the pig pen. We say, I don't like it there. I want to come back to you, Father. He hugs us. He comes running towards us. Has God ever not come and loved you when you come back to him? It's never happened for me. And so that's what we want to do all the time. And so we're looking at the spiritual malady, how it looks, so we can straighten ourselves out. It says in dealing with resentments, which is the first thing we look at, we set them on paper. So it says you don't do them in your head. You don't talk out your four step. Because it's you got to put it on paper so you can see the crap in your head and write it out. So you list all the people, institution, or principles with whom you were angry. It says we're angry. It doesn't mean you have to hate them right at this moment. Did they bother you? Was there a first grade teacher, somebody in elementary school, counselors at the summer camp, didn't pick me for the baseball team? All your relatives, anybody you've ever had a relationship with. Just go through anybody you've worked with. School, you'll think of a million names. Now, you don't have to list everybody. Because if you're really honest, a lot of people bothered you. A lot of people made me angry or bothered me, disturbed me. And we're going to look at that in a minute, why that was true. But we're going to look at the big resentments. And the big resentments keep you really sick. Because you may be seeing these people again, or you have shame and guilt over them. And you need to see the truth. So I usually tell people, stop at 25 to 50, because they're all the same after a while. So you're going to put them on paper. That's column one. People talk about the columns. You write who you're angry at. Institutions could be the IRS, the FBI, the police. They arrested you when you were drunk. You were called domestic battery. How dare they come and arrest me? You know, it could be the government. It could be the Republican Party, the Democratic Party. It could be our president. It could be the other people. It's endless. We're alcoholics. Principles. There are principles that we don't like. One is, if I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me, right? But that's true. So there are a lot of principles. Some people don't like the Ten Commandments. Why? Because they can't follow them. And so they don't like them. And so that's the first column. The second column is why we were angry. And there's examples here on page 65. Why you're angry. Keep it short. But keep it succinct. She tried to strangle me. She took me to court. She took the kids away. She spent too much money. Or he was mean to me. Blah, 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 blah. Keep it succinct, but get to the essence of it. And then here's the key, the third column. And this is why we get angry. We found that it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. Now notice, hurt or threatened. Threatened means you get afraid. All your anger comes from fear. And you get threatened. And you're hurt. Your pride gets hurt. And you're threatened. Your self-esteem is threatened. So we were sore, we were burned up. On our grudge list, we list opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relationship with been interfered with? I wrote here, I didn't write it today, I didn't even review this tonight, I've done this so many times. I wrote, don't mess with me. Right? We should wear a sign. In fact, we should give every new person a sign. Don't mess with me when they come in here. Some of them act like it. So, anyway. So I wanted to talk a little bit about why self-esteem and pride are a problem. And I looked up on the internet I was trying to explain self-esteem and pride to somebody when they're doing this. And on our sheet it says self-esteem is your opinion of yourself, low or high, and pride is an excessive concern with yourself. But I looked up on the internet, and they don't understand us, because they talk about self-esteem. Now, almost all alcoholics have low self-esteem. And they give all these solutions to it. I wish I copied them, all these things you're supposed to do to improve your self-esteem. And I said, well, nobody can do that. And so where does low self-esteem come from? And then how is that related to pride? So it occurred to me that our low self-esteem has to do because we're separated from God and we're on our own. And so I found this this article this guy wrote. He says, self-esteem is healthy. Self-esteem is your own worth, what you think of yourself, your self-worth. He says it's healthy as long as the esteem is drawn from God. Now think about that. He says when it comes from the praise and acceptance of others or anything else than God, then you're in deep doo-doo. Because if God isn't the source of your self-esteem, then you become prideful. And excessive pride is an excessive absorption with yourself and what you want and how things are going. And then he says, self-esteem is defined as one's own worth or ability to self-respect. But we have to get that from God. And if God isn't giving us self-esteem, then we become prideful. And he writes, the God complex, which is me, when I came in here, finds it tough to credit our greatness to the Creator, because then it means that there's something higher than me. And that made a lot of sense to me. If I'm living in this God complex in my mind, my self-worth, I can't give credit to God. It has to come from me. And he says, when pride is in the heart, and he says, when pride is in the hearts of men, they're distant from God. And it says, to compensate, they seek the validation of men and become people pleasers. Anybody relate to that? In exchange for esteem. And so we're putting ourselves in trouble. And I thought that really made a lot of sense. He says, low self-esteem is when a person doesn't have confidence and ability to do something, they don't value themselves. Low self-esteem comes from being disconnected from God or not receiving enough validation from people. Now, I had no relationship with God when I was 5 years old, but I had low self-esteem. I had low self-esteem from early childhood. I don't know why. And I was getting validation, well, because I wanted validation from my mother or other people to feel good. I learned that when I was 3, 4, 5 years old, kindergarten. I didn't consciously think that. And when my self-esteem comes from the outside world, then I'm dependent on them as my higher power, and I'm threatened all the time. I'm not getting enough of it. Does anybody see that? And so then we're constantly getting angry because of our self-esteem and our separation from God. And the thing about pride is that then pride, you become so obsessed with how people are treating you, you overcompensate by being proudful based upon people's opinion of you or how they relate to you. And it's never good enough. And so pride and self-esteem, we're egomaniacs with an inferiority complex. Everybody's heard that. We laugh. We think it's funny. But it's true. My ego is I've separated God out, and I'm so proud of myself and how I am so occupied with myself. It's not a good proud. I usually feel pretty good after I do a meeting. If I've done a good job, I feel like I've done God's will. I feel good. But we're talking about your pride, your excessive absorption with yourself and how the world's interacting with you. And so you're constantly going to be upset. I don't know if that's helpful, but the solution to all that is to be with God and get your esteem from God. And I heard somebody say, you treat low self-esteem with esteemable acts. That's true. But the esteemable acts come from being in relationship with God and doing God's will. Don't we talk about that all the time? Because the esteemable acts I tried to do before I came in here caused harm to people, right? And it caused me harm, and they were my motives were selfish and self-centered. And so we want to be centered on God and change, and that will all change. Remember, our dependence has to be on God, not people. Now, God's deep down inside of everybody in this room. Everybody believe that? How do we block him out? The fundamental idea, God is deep down inside. We block it out by what? Pomp, calamity, worship of other things, self, excessive pride. And we get low self-worth because we're blocked from God. You see how it's all related? So the low self-worth drives the excessive pride, and the excessive pride drives the low self-worth, and we're very sick individuals. But we can treat that. Now, the things I saw on the internet, they may be good, but you know, it's not something that was going to work for me. They, you know, write positive thoughts and think good things and, you know, do a good deed every day. And it sounded great. But I said, you're not going to tell a new person, AA, this isn't going to. But my self-esteem has gotten better by being close to God. I feel better about myself. I'm not doing the things. Steve always says he's not the person he used to be, right? We're different now. We've changed. And so I thought it was worth to go over that, because all of our anger is related from fear. They're not treating us right. They looked at me wrong. They think they're better than me. Then the other thing, I looked up low self-esteem. How does it look? People who have low self-esteem hate to be criticized. Anybody relate to that? But we're very critical of everybody else. And we see the world as a hostile place. I mean, it's true. But we have a solution for that. This will work for everybody. But for alcoholics, the key is to get centered on God and understand that He loves you. You're a child of God. Love His children the way He loves you. And if you love His children the way He loves you, you're going to feel okay. You're going to be okay. That's why those two commandments, love the God, Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and might. Does that sound good? Anybody think that's a good idea? And do it all the time. And that means stay connected to God. Have God the center of your life, directing your life. Now, nobody does that perfectly. Love your neighbors yourself. Anybody ever heard that? Sounds good. But they're not talking about this love. They're talking about how you do. What you do, how you be towards the other person. Are you being kind, considerate? Are you doing good things? And so how is your behavior? And by doing good things to other people and being good to other people, you build self-esteem. So I don't know. I got a lot out of that. I really tried to see. And I could see my whole life. And it was never enough. It was never enough, no matter what I did and how hard I tried. It was never enough to make me feel okay. You know, I could get the 3 degrees on the wall. I'm still full of fear and low self-esteem. And now, I used to live the world that 299-to-1, you know, if 299 loved me and the one didn't, oh, I'd focus on that and cry, oh, he doesn't like me, oh my God, and I must be the only one. But I realize now that if that person doesn't like me, have a party. You know, don't like me. Somebody that comes up says, I don't like the meeting. I say, don't come back. You know, it's not, I don't have to take it home and get angry at that person or afraid. It's just, it is what it is. People are who they are. So I always, my whole life was trying to please people to make me feel good. And if you make people your higher power, you're in trouble. So the fourth step, and we'll look at this, I just want to look at these examples so you can see, and then we'll look at some more about resentment next week. Is that okay? So let's look at Mr. Brown. He was angry at Mr. Brown. Now this is a good one. Mr. Brown is paying attention to my wife. Well, of course you should be angry at him. Told my wife of my mistress. What a guy. Let's just execute this guy. Brown may get my job. He's taking my job at the office. Now the guy who wrote this believed all this. And Mr. Brown, he's justified anger. Somebody told me that we have justified anger because Mr. Brown is obviously not a nice guy. Now, it affects your sex relations. It affects your self-esteem. You're going to lose your job. Your wife's going to leave you. Your mistress is going to leave you. And you have fear. And you're going to lose your job, so your security's threatened, you see? And your relationships. And so, but what's the truth of all that? If he wasn't drunk all the time, the guy wouldn't be getting his job. If he didn't have a mistress, his wife wouldn't be paying attention to Mr. Brown. You see? And this is how we do the resentment inventory. We look at the things, well, Mr. Brown, look at this guy. But no, the truth is that he threatened me, and he threatened me because of my mistakes and my actions. So I need to change my personality and not do these harmful things anymore, and then I won't have to get angry at Mr. Brown. Does this, you see how it works? And the truth is that we don't have to get angry at Mr. Brown at all, because it just separates me from God. We could say, Mr. Brown's Mr. Brown, and that's who he is. And then maybe I have to look at myself and why he's threatening me. Now, Mrs. Jones, she's a nut. She snubbed me. She competed her husband for drinking. He's my friend. She's a gossip. So, I mean, she obviously is a bad person. And so how did she snub him? We don't know. She committed her husband for drinking. Well, he probably needed it. He was my friend. She's a gossip. How does he know that? See, and it affects his personal relationships and how he feels about himself, because he sees her as snubbing him because he has low self-worth and he has excessive pride. And then he's afraid. See, whenever your self-esteem is threatened, you get afraid. Now, what's the truth of that? We don't know how she snubbed him. She may not. And her husband probably needed help. And we don't know if she's a gossip. He may think she is. And even if she is, you don't have to get angry at her. She is who she is. She could be a nut. There can be people who are nuts and gossip, but you don't have to be angry at them. You just go, wow, have a party. His employer. Anybody have unreasonable employers? Anybody not? They're always unreasonable. But you see, this is wrong in the beginning, because you don't work for anybody anymore except God, remember? We work for God now. But he's unreasonable, unjust, and overbearing. Sounds pretty bad, doesn't he? Sounds like a justified resentment. Threatens to fire me for drinking. How dare he? And I padded my expense account. What's wrong with this guy? See how crazy our anger, our resentments are, and it threatens our self-esteem, our pride, our security. And then if he gets fired, his wife's going to leave him and he won't have sex. You see how it's all related? But the truth is that if he wasn't drunk all the time, but if he didn't pad this expense account, he wouldn't be in trouble. And who decides that the boss is unreasonable? I did. And unjust. He may not be. He's just the boss. And he has a job. He has a responsibility to the other employees. So you see how resentments get all screwed up? Because if you just read the second column at a meeting, then the whole meeting would be about, wow, you're right. I mean, these people are terrible. How can you go work there? But you see, that just keeps you sick. We don't want to be sick. And we're going to learn next week how we get free of these so we can see it differently. And so my wife misunderstands and nags. Anybody ever had a nagging wife? Misunderstanding. Likes Brown. Wants house put in her name. There you go. Well, why? Because I'm drunk and I'm mean and I have a mistress. And see, but you can't see it. That's why, I don't know who wrote these four examples, but they're really classic. Because it shows how justified resentments really are justified. It's never okay to be angry. We want to go back, and we're going to learn how to be free of that next week. Next week we have Super Bowl, which will probably be a resentment if the Chiefs lose. So get over that right now. Lower your expectations. And the following week we'll pick up there. Sorry to talk too long. Thank you.